Portugal was one of the five countries that received multi-billion dollar bailouts during the Eurozone debt crisis. Well, 8 years later, the country's economy has recovered. Its budget deficit is now near zero, the lowest level in more than 40 years. And figures released this week show gross domestic product, or GDP, up about 2% in the first quarter of 2019. Joining us now is Pedro Brinca, who's professor of economics at the Nova School of Business and Economics. He's with us from Lisbon, Portugal. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
So based on these numbers, it sounds like Portugal is a success story in terms of the bailouts. Do you see it that way?
Well, it is. I mean, Portugal has, since the democracy started in our country in the mid-70s, has never had a budget surplus in the history of the country since then. And the budget deficit, as you said, well said at the introduction, has been at its lowest level since then. And it's projected to become a surplus around 2020 or 2021, which would be really historical because it has never happened. What I think it was crucial also for this is that, you know, when you have big crisis, that's when it comes the political opportunity to promote big structural changes. And Portugal had a decade of very slow growth, which made it very hard to do structural changes that the country needed in order to remain competitive in the international scene. Mm-hmm. And the crisis was actually a very good opportunity to do so. So we balanced our external accounts. We became very close to turn a surplus in our external accounts. We deleveraged a lot in terms of private debt, which also promotes investment and so forth. So all of these things were very unlikely to happen if it wasn't some outside external force kind of, you know, mm-hmm. Obliging the parties to come together to, you know, an understanding and enforcing all these changes.
But you didn't go the austerity route the way that the Greeks did, right?
It's orders of magnitude different, okay? So Greece can only be compared to the USA in the 1929. Great Depression. Mm-hmm. That's the order of magnitude we're talking about. In Portugal, things were bad, but not epically bad as in Greece. We had austerity. We reduced our public spending in about 11%, I think. So yeah, we had austerity, both in terms of reduction of public expenditure, but also in terms of tax increases. So one of the issues, even though we've had this story of successful consolidation of the public finances, one of the issues is that we still have one of the highest debt of GDP ratios in the Eurozone. And, you know, if there's some crisis or something, we don't really have much fiscal space mm-hmm. in order to spend our way out of the crisis.
And what about in the issue of jobs? How has unemployment been? I know that in 2013, it was 18%, even higher for young people. A lot of them left the country to find work. But today, it's around 7%.
Yeah, so indeed, we during the crisis, we had a huge, massive outflow of people, like to the tune of 450,000, which, of course, for the U.S. doesn't mean much, but for Portugal is 5% of population. And exactly as you were saying, this hit more the young people, and these were the ones who were leaving.
And where did they go, by the way?
Well, a lot of them go to England, they go to France, they go to some to the U.S., I guess, but most of them to Europe. Okay, mm-hmm. Most of them to Europe. Now, the thing about the unemployment rate, it is a success, but one needs to be careful because 18% is huge for U.S. standards. You know, for Spain, is a Tuesday. So that's right. One thing. Second thing, but still, it was high, and it came down a lot, both because, you know, these people left the country, so they don't count for the statistics of unemployment. And second, also because long-term people that were unemployed for a long time, they become discouraged and they ended up also not counting for the statistics. So one also has to have that into account. But of course, I mean, even factoring all these things into the accounting, it's still a success that we managed to get unemployment so low.
Now, one thing that a lot of Americans know in 2019 is that Portugal has become a real tourist destination in a way that it probably wasn't 10 years ago. How much has that helped the economy there?
I think, it helped a lot. And actually, it's one of the issues. I mean, it's good that we had it, but if you look at the productivity numbers, they didn't grow much. And one of the reasons is that because, you know, a good part of our growth came from tourism, which typically is not a sector that tends to show much dynamism in terms of productivity growth. Now, we're very lucky with the Arab Spring and, you know, with all the instability in some of these countries that diverted a lot of tourism to Portugal. And also, I guess, Portugal being in a crisis and in the news actually, you know, help people noticing and knowing that we existed. Mm-hmm. But of course, I mean, a big, big challenge is for us to be able to continue growing in spite of whatever may happen to the tourism sector, because eventually, you know, Egypt and Tunisia and all these destinations that people stopped going to come to Portugal, they might stabilize soon, and then of course it will have a harder time. Another thing that we should not underestimate is actually Brexit, because if you go to Algarve in the summer, the highest nationality group in Algarve are precisely English people. The second highest, Portuguese. So that's just how many people from Britain go to Algarve. And with Brexit, and if the pound devaluates, I mean, we might lose a lot of that tourism.
A lot of that tourism.
Yeah.
Have you had the same political issues in Portugal that some other countries in Europe have had? A rise of the political right, a rise in anti-immigrant sentiment, and even a rise in anti-European sentiment that people want to leave the European Union?
So the answer is a blunt no. So Portugal, unlike many other countries in Europe that you so correctly referred, we don't have a single right-wing or far right-wing, if you want, a seat in the parliament. Not one MP is in the parliament from one of those fringe parties. Traditionally, Portugal has always been, there's always racial problems and tensions everywhere with racism and xenophobic feelings. But Portugal, I tend to believe or feel that it's on the better side of things on that respect. Parties tend to be moderate, I would say. We don't have any of those extremisms. And
a lot of people wanting to leave the European Union.
Relative to the European Union, I would say that there's a little bit more skepticism, but still far away from anything that would jeopardize our position as a pro-EU country. I think of all the parties with parliamentary representation, I think only the Communist Party, with maybe 10% or 8% of the MPs, is actually in favor of leaving the euro. So.
Now, the government in Portugal is a socialist government. It's led by Prime Minister António Costa, who faces an election later this year. Have the cutbacks in public spending affected the social safety net in Portugal, or how strong is it?
Yeah, so in terms of the public infrastructure, for sure, because we've had one of the lowest public investment successive budgets in the history of the country. Now, it is true that this was after many decades where we had big, big investments in our infrastructure. So our road infrastructures are amazing. We benefited from the second wave of digitalization of the financial system. So our ATM machines are brand new, all these things. But in terms of public investment in some infrastructures, like hospitals and schools, you can start showing that, you know, they're under a little bit stress, our health system is underfunded, and so forth. In terms of social safety nets, as you directly posed, we didn't change much in terms of the social benefits regarding to the unemployment benefits and stuff like that. So that safety net kind of remained constant. But of course, one has to consider that in Southern Europe, informal networks are also very, very important. So family, friends, and so forth, they end up also being a strong safety net. And of course, just looking at numbers might underestimate the social insurance that people actually enjoy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think from the social safety net side, people got hurt on their wages, but in terms of social insurance, you know, health system is still majorly free with universal healthcare. We have public education is also free. It's more on the income and the wages and then unemployment that the crisis hit, and not so much in terms of, you know, social insurance.
That's Pedro Brinca, who is a professor of economics at the Nova School of Business and Economics in Lisbon, Portugal. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.